Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast on Central and Eastern Europe and a sister project to New Eastern Europe, the exclusive bi-monthly magazine dedicated to this region. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is our second co-host, Maciek Mikulski. Hi, Maciek.
Hello, Adam. Hello, everyone. This podcast develops thanks to the generous support from our patrons, for which we are truly grateful. And if you like what we do and want to become our patron, we invite you to do so. And please visit us at www.patreon.com, where you can learn more about our packages prepared for future patrons.
And Talk Eastern Europe is also a member of the Europod Network. It is a network of European podcasts which brings together discussions on political and societal trends in Europe and beyond.
Welcome in the episode number 61, in which we look again at the southern part of the region of Europe, at the Balkans, and on the Macedonian-Bulgarian relations, to be more precise. And we would like to discuss in this episode the issue of North Macedonia EU membership perspective, and we will refer to the recent stalemate caused by Bulgaria's objection related to language issue, which for some people maybe came as a surprise, because it was last year when that time we thought that the major obstacle, which was Greece objections related to the North Macedonia name, it was finally solved. But here we have another objection on this road of Macedonia towards the European Union. And basically, this will be our main topic today. And Adam, I would like maybe start with short opening remarks about this topic, and maybe also you can introduce our guest speaker, because you did an interview for this episode. So yeah, I would like to ask you about some opening remarks, like what topics you managed to cover with our guest speaker, because it was not only the language.
That's right. And I just want to say that this is a topic that I personally have been very interested in for the last several years, the North Macedonia and its European aspirations. It became a NATO member already this past June, which was, I think, a huge milestone for the small country. And I personally had the opportunity 3 years ago, I think it was almost exactly 3 years ago, it was December 2017, to meet the Prime Minister of North Macedonia, Zoran Zaev, and I interviewed him for New Eastern Europe. And I remember him saying specifically to me, if we get the name issue finished, we are on the road to NATO and the European Union. And then out of nowhere, at least, I mean, these are issues that have been around for a long time, but nobody had expected.
NATO issue is already done.
The NATO issue is done. That's right.
He was right about this part.
He was right about that. But I think no one had really expected what would happen in November, and that was the Bulgarian veto of opening the accession process with North Macedonia. Of course, there were earlier issues with France and Netherlands, who are cautious towards EU enlargement, but those hurdles seem to have been overcome. But all of a sudden, Bulgaria vetoes this process. And I think for North Macedonia, which has already sacrificed a lot, the society changed their name. You know, they have really agreed to every condition that has been put out there for them. This is just one big blow to everything that they've done in the past 3 years. I think it's really challenging. I met with Bojan Stojkovski, who is a freelance journalist in Skopje, and we talked about these issues and talked about the background, why Bulgaria has objections, and what are the effects on you know, relations between the two countries? What are the effects on the domestic political situation as well?
Yeah, I'm curious to what extent all these objections will finally cause, or how they will impact the attitude of Macedonian society towards the EU membership. Yeah. It is probably too early to say right now, but this definitely deserves our attention, and probably we will come back to this topic again in at Talk Eastern Europe. But you know, I would like add one more thing before we go to the interview, because you know, it's still, when you look at this issue from a distance, it's quite surprising that, you know, Macedonia is a 2 million people country. Yeah. And this language issue seems sometime like, you know, to be like I was wondering why it's so difficult, yeah, to Bulgaria. Why this issue is so hard. And of course, when we talk about this part of the region or even Eastern Europe in general, it is very often the relations between different countries, different societies are very often very complex, and we should, of course, avoid oversimplification. When I was preparing for this episode, before I have listened to the interview you did, I came back to the book written by Polish professor Irena Stawowy-Kawka, who is very good specialist at Jagiellonian University about now North Macedonia history. And I found a quote there, which I think explains like the core problem in very simply way. And now I will very quickly read this quote. It has to be noted that regarding the identity issue, the alphabet is a factor of a special significance in the Balkans. It is a factor identifying national identity far more than in other European languages. End quote. So, you know, I'm sure that there are a lot of different layers of this Macedonian-Bulgarian relationships, and probably from time to time, like domestic politics of a certain country, probably this time domestic politics of Bulgaria are also important layer to analyze. But there is some kind of a factor, this language factor or alphabet factor, as in the quote it was stated, which is like a pre-reason of many different issues. So that would be my part of introduction, and I don't know if you'd like to add anything else. If not, let's go to the interview.
Yeah, I think that's a very good introduction to the interview, because we will get into some of these topics more with Bojan Stojkovski. So let's go in now to the interview. And welcome back to the program. Joining me now is Bojan Stojkovski, a freelance journalist based in Skopje, North Macedonia. He covers tech, science, and foreign policy in the Balkan regions. Welcome, Bojan, to the podcast.
Hi, and thank you for having me today.
So I want to start by asking you about the current situation with North Macedonia and its European Union aspirations. For many years, the main issue in blocking North Macedonia was the objections of Greece related to the name of the country. But once that issue was resolved in 2019, it seemed that the path towards EU membership for North Macedonia was finally open. Then came the veto from Bulgaria last month, which was a bit of a surprise for some people. Bulgaria's objections, however, have existed well before November 2020, but not very widely discussed. So maybe you could give us some background on the whole situation. And what was the reasoning behind the Bulgarian veto for North Macedonia's accession talks?
Yeah, well, the negotiation process for North Macedonia and the European Union at this moment is getting really, really complicated. And like you mentioned before, the process was basically stalled because another member, which was Greece, was blocking it for a very long time. I would say, because like North Macedonia is a candidate country since 2009, and basically until 2018 it was blocked by Athens. So then they reached this agreement, which resulted in the name change. So basically Macedonia became North Macedonia. And we all thought here that, okay, so this issue is now done, and we can move on with the negotiations with the European Union. Last year, unfortunately, again, the process was stalled because France and the Netherlands had objections, had their objections regarding the whole process. I mean, it wasn't specifically meant as a new issue for North Macedonia and for Albania, which were the two countries that were expected to begin the negotiating. But France had objections regarding the whole framework and the methodology of how the accession process was being negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
In March this year, this issue was also resolved. So again, I would say we had our hopes high that the negotiation process will finally begin. But then, as you mentioned, yes, the new problem with Bulgaria is here now. And, well, basically in this dispute, as yes, it goes back way longer than this year. And it's been an issue probably in the relations of the two countries since North Macedonia gained its independence. So basically what Bulgaria is saying and it's asking, the Bulgarian authorities are on the opinion that a separate Macedonian identity developed only after the Second World War, under what they perceive was the pressure from Yugoslav authorities, because, like you know, Macedonia was a part of Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
From the Second World War and then on until 91.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of their objections. The second one is that the Macedonian language is basically a dialect of the Bulgarian one, and their authorities are asking that the EU also acknowledges this. And that the official definition that is put in the negotiation framework is that not Macedonian language, but the official language of North Macedonia. Basically, they are saying that there is no Macedonian language.
Hmm.
And their third objections is about the Macedonian minority in Bulgaria, because this is connected with the first point, and if we as a country acknowledge that there wasn't a Macedonian nation before the Second World War, then we are also acknowledging that there isn't a Macedonian minority now, and basically this sums it up, the current issue. Most of these objections were supposed to be dealt with the agreement that the two sides signed in 2017.
Exactly. Yeah.
It was a friendship agreement. But however, I think that the progress in this treaty has been very hard to implement, and this is now the main issue that Bulgaria has put on the table. So they are saying that if you don't implement the whole agreement, then you cannot continue the negotiation process.
That sounds like it's a very complicated issue and process. And I guess one of the questions that I have, you know, looking at this whole situation, the fact that, you know, the Macedonians already had to sacrifice by changing their name, which was considered a big compromise, and it was a painful process for a lot of Macedonians. You mentioned the France and Netherlands objections to enlargement, which I think a lot of Macedonians probably felt it was against them in some way, or at least it was very disappointing. So I guess, and the question is, like, how much is the society willing to sacrifice to get this process going? Because it sounds like there's just, like, the society is required to make more and more sacrifices in order to even continue this accession process, which has been, like you said, stalled for quite some time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have a point here, because it seems that each year there are more and more conditions and more objections that are coming from different member states. And authorities here in North Macedonia have made it clear that these are the red lines that cannot be crossed when it comes to this particular issue with Bulgaria. So, but from what I have heard and from the discussions I've also had with colleagues in Bulgaria, so because they are having their elections in March next year, many are considering that this also may be just an electoral ploy for the authority, for the ruling party and the coalition. So once that those elections pass, then maybe the new government there and the current government here can somehow find some type of compromise, either with the new friendship treaty, or maybe they could sign an annex to this agreement that would guarantee its implementation. But when it comes to the official language, I think that this is a major red line that cannot be crossed. So Bulgaria would definitely have to offer some type of compromise that could be used by both sides.
Yeah, and that was that covered in the Treaty of Friendship and Cooperation from 2017?
It sort of had a clause in it, but it didn't state that it would affect the EU process. So this is kind of the major hurdle that is up now, because earlier this year, North Macedonia also became a member of NATO. And since Bulgaria is also there the same objections that are raised now weren't raised before.
Right, exactly. I actually wanted to ask about that, because Bulgaria did not have any issue with North Macedonia joining NATO, right?
No, definitely not. Not. They never set this conditions. I think even if you go back to last year when France and the Netherlands had their say, Bulgaria also kept quiet about this. And they also stated back then they would not block the process for North Macedonia.
So it seems there's some domestic political element to Bulgaria's issues with North Macedonia. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because we know also that there's some problems domestically in Bulgaria as well. Mm-hmm, protests have been going on for quite a long time. Yeah. I wanted to ask also about in terms of people-to-people contacts between Macedonians and Bulgarians, because how does it look from like kind of the social aspect? If we take away the politics, how would you say the relations are, like, you know, economic, social, tourism? Of course, we're in a pandemic year right now, but before the pandemic had started.
Well, in terms of that, I would say that there were never these major issues between the people of the two countries. And you could also freely travel to Bulgaria. Bulgarians could travel here. I mean, it seems that this political mess right now has worsened it, because we can also see a lot of hate speech now aimed towards Bulgarians, whether it's on social media or in the some TV shows or debates. So this definitely has an effect on the whole relations between the people. But I think that even now, if the pandemic is, let's say, just going to end, and you are going to Bulgaria tomorrow, you wouldn't feel affected by these issues. Or if the Bulgarians came here to North Macedonia, I mean, the relations interpersonal are just not as much connected with these political games as most people think. But still, I think that on the long run, it can affect it, and it can definitely have a negative impact on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think because it's like these emotions that are used in these kind of arguments, it's, it can be very, it can have a negative impact. And I'm curious also, what about the Macedonian society's attitudes towards European integration? We kind of talked a little bit in the, earlier about how they had to make all these sacrifices, but has this process or this veto from Bulgaria and the demands from Bulgaria, has it had an impact on public opinion in Macedonia about joining the European Union?
Well, I think that's from this perspective, right now, most people are disappointed, and because they are considering that this Bulgarian veto has seriously undermined the whole credibility of the European Union, and especially of the accession of the Western Balkans. Because what now seems like an issue for North Macedonia, tomorrow this can also be an issue for Serbia or for Bosnia or for the other countries that are looking to join the EU. And it negatively affects the whole credibility. And maybe yes, maybe the public opinion here has changed a little bit, since also in the 2018 referendum on the name change.
Right. Yeah.
So basically, the main question was: are you for joining the EU and NATO by changing the name? So if you go back to it now, people are disappointed, and rightly so, I would say. So it has undermined the credibility. That's, I think this, we can say that this is certain. But then again, on the long run, the country is really eager to join the EU. So if there would be a solution, like in the upcoming year, I think that the situation would be back to normal. Yeah.
And what about the effect on the domestic political situation in the country? Because there was, I think, parliamentary elections held this year, and the and Prime Minister Zaev's party won again, but it was quite close. Does Vrmel have support? Is it gaining support when these kind of setbacks happen?
Well, I would say that, yeah, I mean, like you said, the results were very close. So basically it's like a 50-50, maybe, between the two biggest parties. And, I mean, there is another aspect of the whole issue is that last year, after the veto from France, basically, it was then that the government resigned and said, okay, we're going to have a parliamentary elections in the summer, and we need to address the whole situation with the EU. Because as we promised, we would open the negotiations, we didn't deliver. So I think that now, it kind of puts the government and the ruling party in a similar position.
Mm-hmm.
But since the elections were like just 4 months ago, right, I don't believe that there will be an additional effect, and that they would say that they would also resign again. So probably they will use the rest of their mandate to make things right with Bulgaria.
And I wanted to ask about, is there any discussions in the country about any sort of Russian interference? Or, I mean, you know, it's, it seems like a situation that's very easily, mm-hmm. that can be easily exploited by disinformation and social media, you know, when we have a lot of emotions involved. Is there any research, any discussions that maybe Russia is playing a role to keep this wedge driven between Bulgaria and North mm-hmm. Macedonia?
I think there were some speculations about this, that Russia could have played a role, but the discussions weren't that serious, I would mm-hmm. say. And basically, they're just focused on what exactly is now the driving force behind the hate speech that is being used either from North Macedonia to Bulgaria or from Bulgaria to North Macedonia.
Yeah.
So basically, I think that the two sides are focused on how to contain this rise of nationalism, maybe, and that's the two sides are engaging in. But as far as I think Russia, there was a bigger talk about this when the country was completing the NATO process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, for obvious reasons, yeah. But for the EU, I don't think there are a lot of opinions that are going in this direction.
Interesting. Well, we'll see how that goes. I wanted to ask also briefly about maybe two more topics, a little bit outside the topic of EU aspirations of North Macedonia. But one of the things is not very much coverage on how North Macedonia handled the COVID-19 pandemic. So could I ask maybe just a brief kind of summary or some reflections as you are based in Skopje? How did the pandemic look like, or how does the pandemic look like in North Macedonia?
I mean, during the spring, when the pandemic emerged, I think that North Macedonia did what most of the countries in the region were doing. So we had a partial lockdown. Mm-hmm. We began with the quarantines. Back then, the situation was okay. But during summer, again, like most countries, restrictions were maybe lifted.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are seeing now in autumn is a big second wave. So each day we are having maybe 1,000 plus new cases.
Wow.
And people are being hospitalized. And also I would say that the mortality rate is really affecting the health system. It's stretched to its limits, I would say. So probably this news about the vaccine is really good at this moment, and there are maybe hopes that North Macedonia could get some vaccines at the beginning of the next year, and it can have a positive effect, because I mean, really, like in the rest of the Balkans, I am sure that you are aware how this whole process of the migration of the medical workers to the West has been ongoing during these recent years, and now we are getting to feel the damage that it can do to the medical system.
Right.
So there. For now, I would say that the situation is definitely worsening, and we are just hoping that either by the vaccines or maybe by some other treatments that are available, that it will help the health authorities in dealing better.
And I'm sure also the economic situation probably has been affected as well, with the tourism down quite a bit. I mean, well, probably almost non-existent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, at least since.
Definitely, yes, because also we're a small economy, and we were counting on tourism during the summer, but it just wasn't there. The country, I mean, people from the country couldn't go elsewhere in Europe, and because of the whole situation also, not a lot of people came to the country for tourism. So yes, as you mentioned, it hasn't been a good year in terms of the economy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the last question I wanted to ask briefly is about is there any reaction in Macedonia with the election in the U.S. with the Joe Biden, the victory of Joe Biden, and who will be coming in January as president? Has there been any discussion on what that might mean for North Macedonia in transatlantic relations, being already a member of NATO, and perhaps returning to our original talk on joining the West via a membership of the European Union?
Well, yeah, the expectations are that President-elect Joe Biden will take a different approach towards the Western Balkans.
Maybe. Yeah.
That the new administration will pay more attention to the region, and that it will positively affect the integration processes. I mean, yes, the country did became a member of NATO during this year. So now I think that authorities are counting on that the cooperation with the US will continue, and it will grow to practically benefit the whole region.
Yeah, we'll definitely see how that goes. I agree with you that I think there will be a completely different approach to the Western Balkans from the previous 4 years, which was quite quite interesting also to observe and to watch. Bojan, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure.
This was a really interesting discussion, and we look forward to also your article coming up in the next issue of New Eastern Europe.
Okay, great. It was my pleasure to tell you more about this issue. I hope it can raise some discussion.
Yeah, me too.
That was Adam's interview with Bojan Stojkowski. I hope it gave you the good understanding of the current stage of the main issue, this problem between Bulgaria and Macedonia regarding the EU membership perspective for Macedonia. And yeah, as we outlined in the intro, it's such a kind of an issue which engages emotions, and I think Adam, you very often underline it in the interview. And I have a question to you, maybe just to sum it up our main topic of this episode. We should be rather prepared for a long march, yeah. If we talk about reaching a compromise between Bulgaria and Macedonia. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think we should see what happens in the domestic political situation of Bulgaria for sure. The elections are coming up next year, and if the elections take place and the current government stays in power, which by the way, there's a lot of internal unrest, a lot of social dissatisfaction with the government. So we'll see how that also translates into elections. But I think they definitely are trying to use these kind of historical issues, language issues, identity issues to stir up emotions and gain support for them, which has been falling. So we'll see how that goes. If they are reelected, will they drop these issues, or will they be kind of forced as part of their mandate to push it even further? This is the big question. And if that is the case, I think you're right. It will be a long road. And how long... And I guess the question is, how much endurance does the support for EU aspirations and EU membership in North Macedonia, how long will it last if they keep hitting these same barriers all the time? This is the big challenge. I think we'll require North Macedonia will have to find some allies in the EU to convince Bulgaria that it's in everybody's interests to support North Macedonia's joining.
Yeah, of course, EU has to maintain its interest in this process as well. But on the positive note, I would add it's probably the last my last comment on this. Prior 2019, we also were thinking that the agreement compromise between Greece and then Macedonian government is almost impossible.
True.
And then we had some kind of acceleration, and finally both sides reached this compromise. Of course, it came at cost for Macedonian side, but I'm referring to that in politics you never know, and I think that could be like a source of hope for Macedonian side, that as it seemed impossible to reach the deal with Greek side now. But it was finally successful. It may also happen with Bulgaria, I think.
Yes, let's hope. And we do have a brief op-ed that we just published on the New Eastern Europe website by Tomasz Kamuzela, who some of you may know. He was in one of our episodes during the Belarus podcast. But he has he's also very interested in the Balkan regions, and he follows Bulgaria in particular. And he has quite a strong, I would say, op-ed on why Bulgaria's actions are actually could be considered even illegal from EU law, and we should try to convince Bulgaria to stand down. So take a look at that. We'll include the link for that article in the notes.
And now to finish this episode, we would like to invite you also to listen our traditional announcements. And everything what we would like to say in this last part of each episode. And I think we will start from saying thank you to all our patrons and supporters.
I think that's a great way to start our announcements, Maciek. We have currently 26 patrons. I think it would be great if we could get that number up to 30 before the end of the year. Not sure if it's possible, but we're going to be pushing it from now until the end of the year. It's almost mid-December, so we'll do our best. But just for all of you out there who don't know, we have a special program where you can support this podcast by becoming a Talk Eastern Europe patron. The link is www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. Of course, it's already it'll be the first link in the notes of the podcast. And one of the main benefits that everyone gets, besides some other benefits, including depending on how much you pay each month, you can get access to New Eastern Europe's digital content, for example. But there's always the shout out, the thank you from us. And I just want to quickly say thank you to Klaus, to Plamen, to Sean, Amy, Naomi, Sylvia, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Scapeghost, Wilhelm, David, Elizabeth, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast. It really is helping a lot. We have some other special announcements coming up shortly. But one of the main things that we are just organizing this week, I think maybe by the time we are launching this episode, it will be happening almost around the same time, is a special Zoom meeting with Viktor Martinovich, who is a Belarusian author and activist. Maciek, maybe you want to say just two words about what that's about?
Sure. First of all, I would like to say that we already had two such meetings with patrons, and that was each time something very big for me, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah,
and I think it's also nice way how this project develops, because it means that not everything depends on us, but there are also other people who give us a lot of inspiration, a lot of ideas for future topics for this podcast. And maybe for those who already know our quite new project, the story of Belarus, you could also listen there to Viktor Martinovich. He is very prolific Belarusian author. He is also a professor, very very interesting person with a really huge broad knowledge. And I think with him we will try to analyze like the current situation in Belarus, because we recorded this special series about Belarus quite time ago, and the situation is still very dynamic, changes rapidly. So we would like to touch upon these issues. But of course, there will be also time to talk a bit more about Belarusian culture, because I think this is the topic where we all can learn a lot from Viktor Martinovich. So I really encourage those who are interested in Eastern European culture to become our patron and join our this meeting with Viktor and all future meetings with patrons.
That's right. I think it's a special bonus that we now offer our patrons is these closed, exclusive meetings with figures from the region or experts about the region. And this is our first one, but we are planning many, many more in the future. And this is just an extra benefit for our patrons. So I'm really excited about it also. And it's a chance for them to have some direct contact and also ask questions directly with our speaker, with our guests, and in very informal setting via
That's
Zoom.
That's true. That's true. What I wanted to say last time, I think we even had a cup of tea or wine.
I was still recovering, I think, from COVID, so I was drinking tea at that time. But I think now it will be in the evening, Monday. Glass of wine sounds nice.
Okay, Adam, thank you very much for this episode, for the interview you did. I think that's all what we have, but maybe there is something else you would like to add.
No, I think we covered everything. Maciek already mentioned our side project, The Story of Belarus, the 10-part audio documentary series which covers Belarus' history, identity, culture, economy, politics, and the future. Definitely check it out. There's always going to be a link in our podcast episodes, so you can link over to there. But it's available anywhere you can find podcasts. Just look up The Story of Belarus.
Okay. Thank you all for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.